Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, welcome to the Horse Hour podcast. I'm Amy Frost, and my guest today is the Irish Olympic dressage rider, Heike Holstein. She's off to the European Championships in Rotterdam next week with her gorgeous dressage horse, Zambuca. And Zambuca was homebred and home-produced by Heike. So I wonder, how she done it? Well, she's done this before, and Heike shares some of her stories and her experiences of how she's been training and riding and teaching along with running a family. It's not easy, and she explains everything on the Horse Hour podcast. Welcome to the Horse Hour podcast. We're heading over to Ireland today to speak to the lovely Heike Holstein, and she rides beautiful dressage for the Irish Olympic team. How are you, Heike?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Well, you're very welcome. I'm a bit of a sucker for the Irish accent, but I noticed that, I don't know, Heike, is that an Irish name? I thought it was kind of German descent.
It is. I have German parents, and hence the name. And I was born in Dublin, hence the accent. we call a culchy accent, which is a country accent in Ireland. So people are always surprised when they hear my name. And then they hear me speak.
Yeah, no, like, absolutely. Oh, no. and do your parents, are they fluent German?
Yeah, and my dad died when I was 11, so my mum brought us up. And I speak German every day. So I'm very fluent in German. And when I speak German, I sound like a German. But when I speak English, I sound like a real Irish person.
Wow. So where do you feel most at home? What would you say is your base?
Ireland.
Yeah, because you're born there.
Yeah, and I love Ireland. I love the culture here and... we live in the countryside, but not far from Dublin. So we're quite central, and it's just a lovely place to grow up and a lovely place to be.
And I find with Ireland, it's got a real community feel. You'll hate me for saying this, but I'm part Welsh. So I kind of think the Welsh and the Irish just really know how to get together, don't they? And have a good party, of course.
Yeah, of course. So we're good at partying.
I'm sorry to hear about your father passing when you were so young. Was he into horses?
He was a farmer. And my mum came over to Ireland. They actually met in Ireland. They were both German and they met in Ireland. My mum came over to Ireland managing a stud firm for some German people.
Wow.
And that's how they met. So, but she decided then to stay in Ireland, even though her family was in Germany, and bring us up here because it was such a lovely place to be.
Good for her.
Fantastically, it was me and my brother, and we ended up going to lovely schools and university and everything. So I think she worked very hard to bring us up as well as she could.
That must be even harder for her then, to think that, you know, not only has she lost her husband, but she's away from home. So to make that really brave decision to stay where she was, God, she must be a really strong woman.
Yes, she is. If you speak to anyone who knows her, she's very strong.
And do you get some of that strength, do you think? Is that where your motivation comes from?
Yes, I'm sure it's contagious and hereditary. No, I would count myself quite strong. Yeah.
Well, you have to be. I mean, you've got a family, you've got a husband, you're an Olympic rider. I mean, I struggle to even do one of those things, which is be a mum, let alone, you know, just doing the washing and the ironing and dealing with school runs, let alone having to work at the same time, is hard enough. Hold on a minute. Yeah. Let's just throw in producing some horses and traveling the world, being an incredible rider. How was this the dream, or did it just kind of flow like that?
Always. When I was young, I did everything. I did hunter trials. I rode for the school hunter trial team. I did show jumping. I did dressage. I did showing. I won the Connemara Championship at the Dublin Horse Show. I did everything, but I never had the urge to go eventing because that scared the life out of me, the cross country bit. And show jumping, I did up to grade C, which is kind of middle something. I don't even know what that is now. That was a long time ago, but I wasn't an expert at seeing my stride. So I had a few crashes. And then I always thought, I want to go to the Olympics. So I was like, right, I'm going to do dressage. So and I was good at the dressage, even with ponies and things. So that's how I kind of ended up only like specializing in dressage. Mm-hmm. I still jump a little bit and, you know, do a little bit of pole work with the horses and things. But I always wanted to go to the Olympics. So I was very lucky when we were younger. My mum met a lovely lady who we introduced to us from the Isle of Man, and she decided to sponsor my brother and myself. So yeah. That was able to fund it because it's so expensive and we couldn't afford it. So that was Ballisair Stables in the Isle of Man, and Mary McMillan was her name. She was a lovely lady. So that enabled us to get the horses and compete abroad and live abroad for a few years and go on the circuit. And so it's thanks to her, you know, for sponsoring us that enabled us to do it.
What an amazing lady. And what does she get out of it by sponsoring, apart from the fact that she gets to, you know, support two young, well, were you children? How old were you?
Oh, I was 24 when I rode in Atlanta. So about 21, 22. It was before that.
Not quite a child. Yeah.
No, not that. No, not that young. But she was just lovely. I think she just liked us and wanted to spread the joy.
Yeah. No, how lovely. And what was it like to have that journey with your brother, sharing that with him?
Oh, fantastic. I think at the, where were we? The World Games in Jerez, we were the only brother and sister.
Oh, wow.
Riding. So it was great. Yeah, it's good. And it's, we help each other still, you know, if he has a problem on the flat, I'll help him a little bit. And then he rides Zambuca the odd time as well, you know, so because he rides very well. So even though he's not in horses anymore, we still help each other.
Oh, and what made him give it up, retire, I guess?
Well, no, he did other things. He always had a love of cars and he races cars and now does some business with cars, with collectors and things like that. So the horse game is very, very expensive, as you know, and it's just in Ireland, it's even more expensive because you have to travel a long way, an expensive way to go to competitions. And he just couldn't afford it. Mm. And see, with jumpers, you need a whole string of horses. With dressage, you can go to shows with one horse.
Oh, so he was a show jumper.
He's a show jumper. So he had one horse, the sponsorship deal ran its course. And then he had one horse, which was amazing, but found it hard to get into shows, you know, with one horse, because they'd rather invite somebody with more horses if you're a show jumper. So he just went down other avenues. But he loves the car racing. He's very good at that. He's won many, you know, say a supercar championship here, and he's in the lead in the Fiesta championship. And
oh, wow.
A few 24-hour drives in Europe and stuff and won. So I mean, he's very good at that.
So, yeah, he sounds amazing. So I'm seeing a theme through his life, which is adrenaline. He loves quite the adrenaline junkie.
Yeah. So we're a bit different that way. I'm not as good a driver.
But it's nice that he's still involved, you know, that he comes in, like you said, and helps Zambuca, who's your current horse. Is she the mare that you've bred to go on to be an Olympic horse?
Well, it wasn't meant to be like that. It was a bit lucky. She's the first horse I've bred, and I had a lovely mare who looked like a gelding, and I wanted to breed from her. And my mum had seen Samarant, her father, her sire, in Germany at a show or something, at a stallion. She said, I've seen a really nice stallion. And I was like, sure, go, we'll do that then. And Zambuca came out. And she was a bit of an ugly duckling till she was about 6 or 7. Like, I have videos of her 5-year-old. I'm like, oh my God, what am I sitting on? But she always felt amazing. She's so powerful and willing to learn. You know, at 5, she won the prelim championship in Ireland. And at 9, she was going Grand Prix. She won the national championship at Grand Prix.
Wow, my goodness.
And she's like a sponge. She just loves working and learning stuff. And she's very clever. And she's kind of through riding her for all the years and re-muscling her, she now looks kind of pretty, where she always had a big head and a bit of an ugly neck and an ugly back. And, you know, but she always felt amazing. So I always felt like this is a Grand Prix horse. And now she is.
Oh my goodness. How old is she now?
She's 10.
So that's a long time, you know. These, I often wonder for people that say, "Oh, I'm going to go and do it in a couple of years." You need to buy a horse. You can't. It takes so much time to produce a horse to any level. Yeah. Part of me feels sometimes when I hear of the young horse competitions, like the 5-year-olds and 6-year-olds, I do wonder how developed they are at that stage and if they're ready to be riding like that. What do you think?
Well, I only speak from my own experience. Zambuca wouldn't have been ready to do those competitions. at 5 or 6. She did prelim at 5, and I think novice and elementary at 6. But some of those, the 6-year-old international test, I think is harder. I think it's kind of medium level, isn't it? I think there might be flying changes in it. So she wouldn't be ready for that. She wouldn't have been ready for that at her age. I bred her. I can't afford to buy a ready-made Grand Prix horse. So the horse before that I made, and the horse before that I made. So I can train a horse, and you know, they have to be talented. There's a lot of luck involved, you know, that they stay sound and don't get injured, and so it's just kind of come together, which is fantastic.
You know, isn't it more amazing to know that you've created that? So when you're watching your videos back, do you ever think, I can't believe I'm doing this?
I know. I can't believe I'm going to the European Championships on a horse that a few years ago wouldn't enter an arena, was running backwards and spooking of everything. Yeah, she's a bit of a cow sometimes.
Typical sharp mare. How did you get her through those moments? Because I'm sure there's times when you wanted to, well, are there? Were there times when you thought, this isn't going to work?
No.
Were you never? Really? Wow. Okay.
Because I knew she always felt, so this is going to be a Grand Prix horse. And it's nothing major. You know, she wasn't trying to book me off. She wasn't napping or something. It was just greenness, and she's a little bit strong-willed as well. Which is, I always knew if I get that strong-willed on my team fighting with me, we're in business. And when she was younger, it was a little bit against me, not in a harmless way, like nothing bad. So I was never scared. You know, she never did anything against me personally. So Eric helped a lot. And then we brought her to an awful lot of places, and she got more confident. It was probably lack of confidence as well. So she's got more confident, and we still have to do that. You know, once or twice a week, I bring her somewhere before a major competition. She's only done a few international shows, and we don't have that atmosphere in Ireland. We might have 2 or 3 spectators, and that's your mother and your children at a show in Ireland. And then you go to somewhere like Aachen last week, where there's a few thousand. I don't even know how many were there, but it was amazing. And she was so well behaved.
Was she? Because how did that not blow her brain if she's not used to that environment?
No, she was amazing. She nearly bowed on the way out to the crowd. She walked out on a long rein with, I don't know how many people that stadium holds, it must be 5,000 or more, I must check. And they're all clapping, and she just walked out on a long rein, loved it.
Oh, loved it. Good for her. And there's no chill in her, there's no supplements to keep her calm.
Oh, God, no.
Amazing. No. What do you feed her? Do you mind me asking?
I feed Red Mills. Red Mills feed. And she's a very, very fussy feeder. So if I wanted to give her anything, I couldn't tell you she wouldn't eat it. So she's only eats horse care 10 nuts. And now at the moment in Aachen, I don't know why, but she wouldn't eat a lot in Aachen. I don't know why, maybe because there was no grass. You know, it's kind of a concrete jungle out there. And she's used to being out in the field at home. So she didn't eat a lot when we were out there. So we're playing around with different feeds now. So Kirsty from Red Mills came yesterday and brought all different feeds. And she likes to eat a little bit of one feed, then she moves to a little bit of another feed and a little bit of another feed. So it's like she wants different tastes and different textures. So I think we have to give her a bit of a buffet every meal, like a pick and mix.
She sounds what's the word? High maintenance. Diva.
No, she's a bit of a diva. We call her the queen.
Ah, I see. But do you think it could be part of the move and the fact that she's not used to those environments that are giving her a bit of a dicky tummy? Maybe she doesn't feel like she wants, because when I'm nervous, I don't want to eat either.
Yeah, but she's not nervous at home. So she doesn't feel nervous, you see, at a show. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I can go out in the warm up and everywhere and walk around a long rein and she's relaxed. So I don't know if it's just the being away from home a little bit, but she's done a few trips now. I don't really know. I think she's just a little bit picky. She always has been a little bit, she's never been greedy when it comes to food. You know, she does eat one nut at a time. The special ones are always a bit special, aren't they?
They are. Trial and error. And I'd rather she was a picky eater than a bucker and a rearer. So, you know.
Exactly. There isn't a bad bone in her body.
Do you think there's an element of her, where you've bred her, she's known you since she was born. Do you still see that trust that she has from when she was little to now? Or as she gets more confident, is it a little bit like your children flying the nest?
No, I know her like the back of my hand, I think. And she trusts me, I think. So when we're riding together at a show and stuff, if you watch it on Clip My Horse, the commentator even comments on the communication we have together. I don't see it, but I when I watch it and listen to the commentator, I'm like, oh yeah, maybe, you know, from an outsider, there is that thing. But I kind of talk to her a little bit, even though I know I shouldn't in a competition, you know, very quietly. So I think she does 100% trust me, and I trust her, because we're together so long. Like, we're like an old married couple, aren't we?
It's true. It's true. I just see I've got a yearling, and yeah. And again, I've got no clue what I'm doing. It's kind of trial and error, and yeah. So far so good. But as I'm seeing him grow and develop and become more bold, he's so bold. He's not afraid of anything, and I think he's going to be a jumper. Even though dressage, I hate jumping. I'm afraid of it. But it would be that he's jumping the water bucket at the moment to get to his food. He's like, he's definitely going to be a jumper.
Yeah.
And then there are moments where I see that he's not really quite sure on something, and he'll run to me. And I don't know whether that's my motherly instinct that I love that so much. Yeah. I don't know whether it's a natural, oh, okay, I'll make it okay. But also it's nice that he trusts me that much to know that he's safe. You know, silly things like I took his fly mask off the other day and the flies were irritating him so much. So he just put his head in my lap. As if to say, fix it, please. It's so lovely, isn't it?
Well, it's really lovely, yeah.
I just hope that he'll keep that as he gets older, and as he gets bolder and braver and, you know, more independent, the moments that he doesn't want, or he's a little bit nervous about going into an arena, or there's lots of flags or whatever, that he will listen and turn to me, and if I say it's okay, he'll be okay.
Yeah. And I think every rider should have that bond with their horse. You know, we're not just their rider, we're their mentor, we're their, you know, like a parent with a child, and like a teacher in school. You know, we have many jobs. We're not just the rider. Mm. We have many hats that we wear.
So moving on to children then, what was it like for you having a family and having to continue to travel the world and train the horses? How did you cope when you first had your baby?
Well, I didn't. You see, I had a kind of a 12-year gap in my international riding. So I bred the horse and bred two children at the same time.
Good strategy. I like that.
So the kids, of course, come first. And I think when you're in horses, or probably in many sporting things, there's always the ticking clock when you're a woman and you want to have kids, but there's never a right time, because there is no rest time in horses. You know, the circuit goes on all year. So you have to say, right, okay, I'm going to make time now. And then, of course, it has to happen. But I always wanted kids. So I had two kids, stopped the competing because I didn't have a horse. I sold my Grand Prix horse that I had made when I got pregnant with the first child. And then I was just waiting for Zambuca to grow up.
And what were you doing in that time?
So I teach an awful lot. I still do. I teach lots of show jumpers, eventers, riding club, pony club, love teaching. So I've always taught. I taught the Young Rider eventing team for the last 7 years, and this year as well. So 8 years now. And in those 7 years, we won 5 medals.
Oh, congratulations.
And I was bringing Zambuca up and riding a few other horses and competing nationally. She's won a national championship every year.
Wow.
From when she was 5. So, and she's the same age as my youngest child. He just turned 10. So.
And so are you saying to him, come on, you've got to win some awards. Yeah. If a horse can do it, what are you doing? Well, that rugby, come on, run down the wing a little bit faster.
Yeah.
I need some medals.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've always done the both. I just haven't been on the international circuit.
So now, and you've cracked it last year. So what are you expecting this year?
Well, European Championships are next. So we leave for that just after Dublin now. And I haven't really thought any further than that. That's been the aim for the last year, is to, you know, get her to Grand Prix at the end of last year, get it more secure. It takes a year or two to get that. So we're still in the process of doing that, and then get qualified at the beginning of the year, which we did. So it's just been a step-by-step process to get here.
I think we forget that sometimes, Heike. I think we almost forget about the competitions until they arrive and they're on our TV. And then we think, oh my goodness, how on earth did they do that? It's like you click your fingers and suddenly you're at an international show. And it's very easy to forget that you're at competitions so often to even qualify to get to that stage. And we often talk about the work that goes into it and the effort that goes into it. But I also feel that sometimes as mums, we don't pay attention to the guilt that goes with it, the time that we're away from the family and, you know, dragging the kids all around the country in a horse box, going, come on, go play, you'll be okay. Yeah. And did you ever battle with that at times?
Huge.
Really?
Huge. Yeah, and even before I was competing abroad again, just going teaching away. You know, but I have a really good backup system. I have the lady helping me who was our nanny when we were kids.
Oh, lovely.
Yes, yeah, so she's on her second round, her second generation, and she is amazing. You know, I wouldn't be able to go away if it wasn't for her. And I have my mom and my mother-in-law, and everyone kind of chips in a little bit. And now the kids are a bit older. And as my oldest one says, he's got the common sense, which leaves occasionally, but I can bring them with me. So they've been to Boldsworth and they've been in Aachen, and they'll probably come to Rotterdam as well. And they're quite good, you know, and I think it's good for them as well. You know, they get to see an awful lot. They, on the way home from Aachen, they were in five countries in one day, you know, briefly, but they were. And they get to meet other kids and experience other things. So,
and they have a sense of freedom, I think. They get taught responsibility, as we know, with horses anyway. But, you know, how incredible to be able to travel the world at such a young age. And no doubt they won't appreciate it because they're only five. So they don't realise, it's not until they look back that they'll realise how lucky they are.
Yeah.
But I kind of feel a bit sorry for them.
Well, they're 10 and 12.
Oh, okay. So
they're 10 and 12, yeah.
They're understanding now. Yeah. But I do kind of feel a bit sorry for them. I've got a little six-year-old stepson, and he's the horses are okay, but, you know, they're not great. He prefers motorbikes, you know, and fast things. Yeah. So I'm trying to find things that get him involved. So we tried horse boarding.
What's that?
Oh, it's so cool. It's skateboarding off the back of a horse.
Oh, wow.
So I ride the horse and I pull him with a long rope and a skateboard.
You want to play a horse?
Yeah, I have. My horse is amazing. It's his job is to be a nanny, basically. And he's great. And so you have these mountain boards. And as they get older, they can start going across fields and they can jump a bit like wakeboarding behind a horse. Yeah, nice. And this was amazing because it's now got him into horses. And so he went into school and said, I went horseboarding this weekend. And no one believed him. Because they said, you can't do things like that. And that's sometimes I feel for our kids because they're having all these experiences, but they're so off the wall experiences that the teachers and the kids don't believe them. So we have to now take photos and say, no, no, no. And now they all want to go horseboarding.
Sure they do. That sounds really fun.
I've got a friend of mine that's an incredible instructor. She has children as well. And that's where I understand about the guilt being away is she's saying, I feel so bad. I'm away teaching and I want to spend that time with my children. But, you know, as working mums, we've got to do what we can do. And, you know, you're giving them the best life, an incredible life, and still managing to live one of your dreams as well. But the funniest thing I find is that with other people's children, are you the same, Heike? When you're teaching, you're like, right, this is what you do. You're okay. You'll be fine. You give them loads of confidence. But when they're her kids, she's a quivering wreck. She's going, don't go too fast. Not too fast. He'll be okay. Are you the same? Do you find
it's worse watching even any pupils at a big competition because you don't have any control. When you're on the horse, it's you're in control or mostly in control. And if you make a mistake, it's your fault. But we were at, just before Aachen, I was at the European Young Rider Eventing Championships in Holland and helping the team there, teaching them the flat work. And you're watching them going, oh my God, just in the dressage, because you're hoping it all goes so well for them. They've put in so much work. Mm. So it's a little bit like your own kids. You know, the anyone you teach, I think you feel kind of responsible and you want them to do so good. So you're nervous in that kind of a way, not nervous that something's going to happen, but nervous that you want it to go well for them.
You seem very happy and really very you've got a positive attitude, which is so lovely. But I find a lot of kids it's going to sound really bad, but a lot of young people are a little bit negative and take it all very seriously. And I know there's a lot of money involved, but how can we get them to think, be happy about it and be excited and less nervous and serious? Because I feel that when they're happy and relaxed, it tends to go much better. Yeah. But with the nervous, stressed, angsty kind of attitude, it maybe doesn't go so well.
But I think that's the coach's job. You know, you're not just teaching. You have many hats also. It's like the relationship between me and the horse. It's the same with me and the pupil. You're also their motivator. It's your job to make them feel confident, to make them feel relaxed so that they're not nervous. I think we have many hats as coaches, whether you're coaching a horse or coaching a person, not just spewing information out.
Absolutely. Yeah, so, and it surprises me that not that more people like you aren't psychologists.
I think we are. We are. We just don't have the piece of paper saying we're not, we are. Yeah. But I think we are.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
What would you say, this is a bit of a tough question now because I am putting you on the spot, but are there standard things that you tend to say to your students quite regularly that maybe we could share with our listeners? Other than heels down, sit down, lean back.
It depends. I teach such a variety of people that do a lot of different disciplines. But of course, there's common factors. There's ride your horse a little bit rounder comes up a lot. Don't pull on the left rein is a common one because most people pull on the left rein harder than on the right rein.
Mm.
I don't know why. And all over the world.
Really?
I probably say that in many languages. Yeah, there's only I have about two or three pupils that I call my freaks of nature that pull on the right harder than on the left, even though people are left-handed or right-handed. It's weird. Most people pull harder.
I feel like there should be a scientific study based on that. I wonder if it's because we feel heavier on the right, because I sit quite heavy on the left. My bottom kind of I tend to lean to the left a little bit more. So it might be that, or it could be that we're overcompensating because we feel stronger in the right.
I think every horse is uneven, and I think every person is uneven as well. And then sometimes the rider feeds off the horse or the horse feeds off the rider. So if the rider is quite crooked, it can make the horse crooked. And if the horse is quite crooked, it can make the rider crooked.
Mm.
Yeah, so you have to straighten them both out, but you have to see on the day, do you straighten the rider first? Is he the cause of the problem, or do you straighten the horse first and that makes the rider straight?
What do you do?
Well, you have to see what you get. You know, it depends. On who's there at that moment. Sometimes it's the horse and sometimes it's the rider that you have to fix first.
So when you're training horses for dressage and the young ones, where do you pick up your training techniques from? Is it from classical dressage? Is it all from dressage, or do you take elements of other disciplines too?
Experience and having tried things that don't work and tried things that do work. And yes, from all disciplines, I think you learn so much every day. You never stop learning. And you learn from other people and you learn from other horses, riding other horses in different places. You learn things. I think we can never stop learning. And I think I just file away anything that's useful in my head and anything that's not useful or didn't work. I shelve that a little bit. And then you like having a file of facts in your head. So when you come across a horse or a person, you have the problem, you go back to, where's that file? I'll pick that out. And then you have a plan A and a plan B and a plan C. And you know what? If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. You do something else.
Because I hear so much, it's natural for you, you know, for riders at your level. It's just a natural instinct. But I kind of do believe that. I think it's a learnt instinct. You've had to have learned it.
It's experience as well. Mm. Experienced. You know, you can't beat experience. And now I'm older and wiser. And I think I ride better now than I did 10 years ago because I have 10 years more experience.
Yeah, true.
Not just competition experience, but riding other horses. And they're all different. They all have different temperaments. They all have different experiences. They all have different talents. You know, so they're like people. They're very individual. So you can't ride them all the same.
The hardest thing is the basics. I really struggle sometimes with just staying straight and, you know,
yeah.
you hear move forward, go forward more, go faster forward. And I'm like, okay, well, I am, but I'm still wonky.
Yeah.
You know, and it's sometimes I feel it's hard to move on to the next level, whatever that level may be, you know, whether it's up a grade or whether it's just moving sideways. What do you call that? I can never remember
leg
what that's called. Thank you. For some reason, I've got a mental block when it comes to leg yielding. Shoulder in, travers. I know the word travers, but I never know what it means. I have to ask all the time. What's travers?
Yeah. It's when the horse moves forward, sideways along the track. So its front end is along the track and it's where you sit from behind, from you to its tail comes in. So it's like a banana moving along the track.
Oh, nice. Thank you. I feel like a diagram.
If you do travers and half pass and renvers are the exact same movement. They just have three different names because they're in three different places.
Are you kidding? Can't we just say half pass on the line, half pass going sideways and half pass going the other direction?
Yeah. So travers, if you're doing travers on the right rein and you keep the horse in that shape and do it down the diagonal, it's half pass. And if you keep it in that shape and do it on the left rein, it's called renvers. And if you do it on a circle, it's a pirouette.
Oh.
The horse is in the same position. They all give it different names. So it really doesn't matter what you're doing on your horse, as long as the horse is doing what you want it to do. You don't need to put a label on it.
The reason I ask about different disciplines is because I've been really lucky doing these interviews to speak to a lot of different riders that have different disciplines. And I do find there's a lot that we can take from different areas. I mean, dressage is the base, isn't it? It's the absolute root of athleticism, I believe, and the foundations for then going on to doing other things. It's my belief. I'm sure it's yours because you're a dressage rider. But it was interesting. I was at the New Forest show yesterday and I was looking at the carriage driving and the heavy horses. So they've got the really big heavy horses that used to carry the beer and things like that. And I was watching the horses' legs and they move sideways on the spot. They turn, they pivot and they cross over their legs. And I have never seen a horse cross over like that well.
Right. And that was in a carriage.
That was with a carriage. So basically to turn the carriage, they have to walk crossover sideways.
Like a walk pirouette.
Exactly. Yeah. And even for all the competitions and all the international shows. And I think maybe we need to go back a little bit to carriage driving and go back to basics and say we could actually learn. And it's probably how they do that. It's probably because the carriage is holding them still a little bit and stopping them from being able to move forward and pivot. But these horses' legs were crossed so far over. And I just thought, wow, that's pretty amazing how they do that.
Yeah. Yeah, the carriage driving is amazing. But I think dressage come from war? You know, the horses had to do the movements, be really obedient and brave to be able to fight. Mm. And I think a lot of it is like you're talking about leg yielding. If you want to open a gate, you're going to have to move the horse over one or two strides. That's leg yielding. To open the gate, and the same with closing it, or just getting your coat off an upright or something, you just move it over one, two steps. So I think a lot of people do dressage when they don't even know they're doing dressage.
You know, and this got this attitude of it being boring. I'm like, no, are you kidding? It's like it's being feeling at one with the horse, isn't it?
Yes, and it's just control. I think obviously as you go up the grades and there's more things to do, it does get a little bit more exciting, because there's more things you can play with your horse with, more exercises to do and things like that. But no, it's not boring. I think it's our job to make it interesting.
I agree. Do you think, is there an element of when we're learning, we're in a school all the time, but it wasn't until I got my own horse that I realised actually I can do a lot of this stuff out hacking, I can have fun, I can, you know, leg yield down the road, singing to my own songs, and, you know, it just feels you've got this sense of freedom that you can have fun with them whilst schooling at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's very important. And we have to, you know, people say that eventers are show jumpers. To me, does your horse not get bored because it's not jumping? Mm-hmm. And I make it, no, my job is to keep it interested in the movements. So you don't drill them every day in all the dressage movements. We have to think of ways to keep them supple and keep them interested in the sport because they have to want to do it. You can't force a horse to do it. You have to teach them all the bits and pieces and get them to enjoy it and want to do it and look happy while they're doing it.
Have you had any moments where kind of like, oh no, moments, a little bit scary experiences that you could share with us?
Yeah, I've had a few. I was booked off a few years ago at a dressage show and broke my arm. Yeah, that's the only bone I've ever broken, but dressage can be dangerous. Oh, I've had a lot of funny moments, you know, when I was younger. riding a pony in a competition in an indoor, and then I was going across the diagonal in a medium trot, and the sun shone in a hole in the roof right in front of him, and he stopped. I went head over heels onto the ground in front. I had to get back up and continue down the diagonal again. So, oh, there's lots of things, but yeah, only broken an arm once.
But, well, I feel like I don't want to ask you anymore because I don't want to jinx you at this time. But what do you do? What do you do with Sambuca to make it fun with her?
Oh, we go lots of places. Yeah, so once a week or twice a week, I go somewhere to different venues. And it can be, there's a show venue near here that has four or five arenas. There's jumps in it, lots of jumps. And just riding around those up and downhill. And where we live, there's a big main road, so we can't go hacking. So I kind of do that in other places. And that she likes. And then just in the daily work, you know, doing a lot of the movements in fun, interesting ways that aren't like in the competition, aren't like in the test, because at the Grand Prix, it's the same Grand Prix every show. The special is the same Grand Prix special every show. So you just make up movements. It's a bit like dancing, you know, dancing with somebody. You're all over the dance floor. So not just in a straight line and doing what's in the test.
And do you ride a lot to music?
At home, no.
You don't? But you have to do a music test, don't you? Yes. So I just imagine practicing with music quite a lot to get them used to that and the feel. Because it's down to the horse's beat, isn't it? The horse's movements is then what you relate to the track to.
Yes. But the horse's rhythm is kind of the same. Mine is, anyway. Every time I trot, it's the same trot. It's the same rhythm. So you do your dressage test first, you do your layout, and then you video the test. And then I got a lovely girl, a local girl, Linnea Larkin. She put the music to it. So she finds a music that matches the rhythm of the horse. And then we don't really practice riding with the music. But then when you're at a show and there's a lot of announcers and things, it's kind of the same thing. You know, they have to get used to the loud noise. And then there would often be music playing at shows anyway. You know, during the Grand Prix in Aachen, there was music playing. It wasn't Coeur music, but it was music. But I wouldn't ride with music at home. You know, we have a big outdoor and I have no way of getting music to it.
You mentioned the word Coeur. But is that dressage?
Yes, that is the one of the tests that we have to do, where we do a test to music.
So the reason you just sparked something in my memory is there is a lot on Facebook at the moment about this roll Coeur and I know. So it's the when they pull the horse's head down, right down to their knees. Is that, could you explain what roll Coeur is?
I think another word for it is hyperflexion. So it's when the horses are too overbent. You know, their head is kind of in, kind of between their knees, you know, and too deep and forced inwards.
And that's really uncomfortable, doesn't it? So there seems to be quite a huge campaign for some of these international riders that are doing this, that are holding their horses' heads in, and they're getting a lot of abuse on social media. And I'm just wondering if being riding in that environment, if you get to see much of that happen, and if you can really do anything about it. Because I'm the sort of person that wouldn't be able to keep my mouth shut. I couldn't, you know, if I see someone whacking a horse, you know, or abusing it, I can't turn the other eye. I have to say something.
Yeah, I wouldn't see a lot of that. You know, and the shows I've been at this year, I haven't seen anyone do that. But at all the international shows, there are FEI stewards and they are in the warm-up. We can only ride when there is an FEI steward present. So their job is to watch for that. And they would reprimand the rider if they thought they were doing that, so that other riders don't feel the responsibility for that.
Oh, well, that's really good to know. Oh, I'm pleased to know that, because we don't know. I think I need to interview someone from the FEI to understand the rules behind it. Because
maybe an FEI steward.
Yeah.
You know, and there'd be a few in Britain a lot of them steward at many shows. So Dan was in Windsor and in Bolesworth. He's British. He'd be a good one. Their job is to know all the rules. They have to know the length of our spurs, the length of our whip, and they watch all the time that, you know, you can't just go and beat your horse. They would give you, I think there's yellow cards and red cards and, you know, like a bit like in football.
Yeah.
Warnings. Wow. Yeah. And nobody wants to do that to their horses. So I haven't seen that happening in the public domain.
That's really good to hear. Okay, so please tell us a little bit more about Sambuca then. So your strategy for the next few months, when do you go to the Europeans?
Sunday week.
Monday week. My goodness. Yeah. Literally like any day.
Yeah, in about 10 days.
Where are they?
10 days. In Rotterdam. And the jumping Europeans are on at the same time.
So how are you going to get there? Are you driving?
I'm driving, yeah.
Are you driving the horse box or do you have a friend?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm driving and either my husband will help me or my brother will help me drive out because I'm not very good at staying awake for long periods of time. I had to drive home from Aachen on my own with the two kids, so they kept me awake, wrestling in the back. But I had to buy a lorry for Sambuca as well because she didn't like travelling in a trailer. She got a fright one day. A lorry came up right behind me and slammed on the horn.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they're buggers. Yeah, big cement truck. So she got a fright in that. So I have a big lorry and she has three partitions in it and she loves it.
What happened when he put the horn on?
You know the way they go right behind you in a trailer, like yeah, blew the horn. Oh, she panicked. She jumped around and then, you know, the trailers are kind of flimsy and they move around a bit. And luckily it was at the top of our avenue, so I had to take her out and I led her home. But then the next time I was in the trailer and a lorry overtook her, you know, came close, she was a bit frightened and wary and it just kind of escalated and got worse and worse and worse.
Mm.
So in the lorry, she feels safe.
Yeah, good. I'm not surprised. To be honest, I can't believe that you're driving all the way, you know, to different countries with a trailer. I don't even want to go down the road with a trailer.
Yeah, I'm going in a lorry. Yeah. But I have done it with a trailer. With my last horse before I had the kids, I drove to Slovenia with a trailer, with a Jeep and trailer on my own. It took 3 days.
Mm,
and we had no Google Maps or anything in those days. Reading a map. Yeah, yeah. So you do what you have to do, don't you? Like, you know.
Of course you do. Where do you stay when you do those trips? Well, now you can stay in the horse box, but when you had a trailer, did you have to find stables to stay out on the route? Or
yeah, you'd organise all that beforehand. So there are a lot of places around where you can stay. So if we're going to Europe now, we'll stay somewhere near Dover. So we're driving one day from here to Dover, and then the next morning, then we'll get the ferry Dover Calais and continue on. And if you're going further afield, you'd only do about maybe 6, 7, 8 hours.
Mm. Oh, hiker, come to Poole. Don't go to Dover. Go to Poole, and I'm like 40 minutes from there. Come and stay at my house. You don't need to stay in the horse
box. Is there ferry crossings from Poole?
Yes. I don't know where in France, but I think, yeah, we've got Poole or Weymouth. Nice. So have a Google. Come stay at mine. Oh, I'd love to meet Sambuca. You wouldn't be allowed to go. I'm so excited for you. And are the kids going with you? I don't even know their name. I feel so rude.
Jake and Archie.
Yeah, yeah.
Fabulous. So Jake and Archie going with you?
Yes, because their school starts again the week we get back. So it's their last hurrah, holiday. Yeah.
And do they have jobs now? Do they help? Do they help you groom and get Sambuca ready? And
yes-ish. Sometimes they make more mess than they try to clean up. But they're quite happy just wandering around and looking at things and going off and buying a bit of popcorn. And
yeah. So then, your team then, how big's your team that will be going? It's you, your husband, your brother, your two children, Jake.
Well, my brother would probably, if he helps me fly out, because my husband might have to work, he'll fly home again. If he helps me drive out, my brother.
Right.
So, because my husband works, he's an accountant. So he mightn't get enough days off. He wants to come to the actual competition. Yeah. So he mightn't have time to drive me out. So my brother might be called into duty then. But he'll fly home again.
And no grooms?
I'm the groom.
Heike, we need to get you help. How can you do this by yourself?
I would be bored otherwise. Like with one horse, it's easy. I do it all myself at home anyway. I only have three horses and we have a few ponies for the kids and we do it all ourselves. We have quite a small private yard. So people come here for lessons and leave again. We don't have any liveries or anything. And I do all the mucking out and everything myself. So I'm used to doing that. Mm. And I love doing it. And I think that helps connection between the horse and the rider. I do everything for her. Like I get her feeds, I muck her out, I give her hay, travel with her on the boat and stuff. So the trust, I think, is more than if I just arrive and ride.
Oh, well, I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. Please, will you phone us afterwards and let us know how you get on? Or send a video. I'd love to see a video of you and Sambuca. Can we watch it on TV? We must be able to. There must be a way.
It's on. There's a lot on Clip My Horse. And I'm sure Rotterdam will be on something. Mm. The Europeans. I'm sure it'll be on a lot of TV channels or FEI TV or something like that.
I'm sure it'll be covered Archie a lot. And Jake to put up a banner so that they get on TV too.
Come on.
ride, mummy, ride.
Hush. Hold on.
Love it.
Yeah, that's very exciting and can't wait. And we have a team coming, so it'll be great. Yeah, and it was the first time we had a team in Aachen this year as well, ever.
So the aim is Tokyo then? The aim is Tokyo next year? Yeah.
So we need to qualify a team place at Rotterdam at the Europeans.
And how do you know if you qualified? What do you need to get?
So I think there are 5 teams not qualified and 2 spaces available. So the best 2 teams out of those 5 get a slot after the Grand Prix. That's kind of the Nations Cup.
Oh, I'm really bad with the point system. So can you us know?
I'd have to let you know. There's other people much, because I've been out of the loop for so long. Judy Reynolds' husband, Patrick, is fantastic at this. He knows, he's very good at all the statistics and things. So he knows exactly, you know, all the teams, what they've been getting, what scores they've been getting, what scores we need to get. We need to beat them on the day, obviously. Mm. So that's what our aim is to qualify a team for Tokyo.
Oh, amazing. Well, fingers crossed for you. Best of luck.
Yeah, everything
and,
crossed.
And we'll phone Patrick then and say, right, give us an update.
Yeah.
Find out how we do it.
Be, you know, I think the Grand Prix is Monday and Tuesday. So Tuesday evening, it'll be known.
Okay.
So yeah.
Good luck, Kaika. Thank you.
Thank
you so much. I hope your husband does manage to get out there to see you ride. If he doesn't, then I think he needs to give up his job. Like, seriously.
Yeah. No, he will be coming. He will be coming.
And yeah, give Zambuka an extra carrot for us because I think I'm in love with her.
She's special. She's such a diva.
How can we follow you on social media? Are you on?
I'm on Facebook. So I have Heike Holstein Dressage on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. But I have a friend of mine doing my Instagram because I cannot get the alone. So she puts up my Instagram posts.
It's good just to see your photos and see what you're up to behind the scenes and, you know, any little clips.
I think it's so important to love what you do. You know, I think horses is a passion and you have to get up in the morning and look forward to riding and look forward to working and look forward to teaching. So that's what I'm going to do now.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a million. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. You can hear all previous episodes of the Horse Hour podcast on our website. Just head to horsehour.co.uk. And as always, you can have them downloaded straight to your mobile phone if you hit subscribe on iTunes, Acast, Stitcher, Player FM, and of course, Spotify. While you're on Spotify, you can listen to our own hacking playlist. I quite enjoy hacking to the music that we've uploaded on there and we've liked. And you can actually add your own music as well if there's a particular song, then it's all collaborative, so just click add to the playlist. It's quite fun on a sunny day. We've got a winter hacking playlist as well if you want a little bit more somber music, but do enjoy that, and I hope you're enjoying spending time with your horses. As always, I love being tagged in your photos and your videos and all the competitions that you're heading to and all the little fun times that you have with them. So don't forget to tag us. I'm at amystevenson1. Yeah, my name is still Amy Frost, but my handle is my maiden name, so amystevenson1, and of course at horsehour, hashtag horsehour. Hope you have a really great week with your horse, and I'll speak to you soon.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.